What's up, sinners and choosers? Welcome to another episode of Choose Your Own Religion. My name is Joe. Thank you guys, as always, for tuning in this week. This week, I got a comedian, Jonathan Rowell, who is one of the funniest comics, who I've known him for a long time, one of my favorite comics to watch, without a doubt. You can follow him on Twitter, at John Rowell. I'll have the links to that in the show notes. I don't know what else to say today, folks. My heart hurts. It's heavy. Go through a quasi breakup. It feels like the feeling is like outweighing what on paper maybe it should be. For whatever reason, women and comedy are the two things that really, really drive the emotional ticker for me. So I'm not feeling super enthused right now, and I don't know, how to course correct exactly. I know the feeling will pass and whatever. I'll have more calluses on my heart and all that good shit. I'm not gonna try to be like a jaded fuck or anything. I've already done that for years at a time. No need to do that again. And I'll be fine. But just letting you know what I'm going through right now. But this was a great episode today. I got to not think about women for at least an hour. And that was a real blessing. Sometimes distracting yourself and getting your mind off of something besides you is exactly the right antidote for any kind of depressive funk you might be in, or a straight up depression. It's for me, it's going to be working out, meditation for those quiet moments, and then distracting myself as much as possible with other endeavors. But that doesn't really have anything to do with religion per se. Every now and then I do think about getting like a religious girl. Sometimes I think like I could just join a church and find my life partner, somebody who agrees philosophically with me. Never mind that the problem is finding one that agrees philosophically to me, which is why I had been going to church every week this year. And maybe that was the problem. Maybe that's why things fell apart in the month of May. In the month of May, I didn't go to a single church. I mean, if you listen to this podcast, you know that my views on church are weird. I'm not a Christian or anything, but this year, as part of my blog, This Week in Spiritual Narcissism, I had been going to one a week. But the past month, whether it was a combination of traveling and smoking too much marijuana, just a general lethargy towards a lot of religious stuff, I hadn't gone, and I feel really guilty about it. I got to put up a post explaining what happened, and just, I don't know, I guess that's what I'm going to return to in the wake of this, of having a person, is just getting more back to basics, get disciplined again, go back the fuck to church, is what I guess I need to do, whether I even like the church or not. And maybe I will find the church girl of my dreams. Maybe she is out there. Maybe she doesn't quite buy it either. Maybe she really buys it, but will think I'm kind of a bad boy for having one step in, one step out. We'll see how it goes. I'm going to be fine. I'm going to keep making these podcasts. I love you guys very much. I really appreciate you listening. If you want to ever email me, joe@joequint.net. Always love hearing from you. Subscribe if you like it. If you want to leave a rating or review on iTunes or Stitcher or something like that, that always really helps. I just did a live Choose Your Own Religion last night. That was a lot of fun. The next one I'm going to be doing is to be determined, but keep your eyes open and ears open and heart open for that. Anyway, that was more of a catch-up than I intended it to be, but now you know kind of where I'm up to speed with a lot of that. Anyway, this episode's great. Jonathan's great. If you're in LA, please find him when he's on a show. And that's it. Here it is, Jonathan Rowell.
Allow the soothing music and uplifting affirmations to center your heart and mind in an awareness of God's love.
Wake up, my dear sinners. Wake up from your deep rest. Won't you say your prayers? Know that you are blessed. I love you, oh, but Jesus loves you the best. And I hope that you choose your own religion.
Well, thank you so much for coming.
Of course. Are we starting?
Yeah, we're starting.
Oh, great.
Yeah,
awesome.
Getting right into it.
Hello, everyone out there.
This is Jonathan Rowell. I do a formal intro later. Like, I'll record a thing.
Got it.
We don't have to go into everything. I mean, we can.
Right. Yeah. I mean, do they know that we're old Coffee Gallery friends? Do people know what the Coffee Gallery is?
I don't think they do. Do you want to explain the Coffee Gallery?
The Coffee Gallery is in... Can I say our location, or is that supposed to be secured?
You can say it, yeah. I mean, it doesn't matter anymore.
Okay. Yeah. The Coffee Gallery is like in a suburb of LA called Altadena, and it was this... this open mic that we went to for years. How long did you go there? When did you start going there?
I started going there when I moved to Pasadena and with Steve.
Yes.
Because I lived like a mile from there.
At that beautiful apartment.
Yeah. And then, and so I went for probably, and I kept going even when I moved here. So I probably did it for like 3 years or so.
Wow. Yeah.
2 or 3 years. Yeah. What about you?
The first 6 years of me doing stand up was that was my second open mic ever.
Oh, and wow.
It was just a weird open mic full of like, road people and alt people and club people and valley people and just like random people dabbling and students. It was like this weird hodgepodge of people. And I really do miss it. And now it's just this kind of like up your ass place with cold brew and stuff like that.
Yeah. People would actually like listen at that mic. It's pretty supportive.
Yeah. And... even when you were bombing, like when I was up there and it was silent, it's like, oh, well, at least people are listening. They're not completely talking over me or anything.
Yeah, I mean, for me, that was like, that was honestly my like probably biggest area of growth was that place, because that's the place where I forced myself to just only do new material for a long time.
Yeah,
there was like, I think the last 2 years of it, I was like, I'm just only going to do things I've like never talked about on stage.
That's the perfect place to break that.
Yeah,
because there was really no like, who's going to see me here? Who's going to book me on this thing? And it's like, probably no one. And and even if you bomb, you probably still will get booked on whatever show anyone's running there. So it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Just do whatever. I really miss it.
Yeah. So I didn't realize you've been doing stand up like that long, like seven
It'll
years,
be right? 7 years this summer.
Yeah. All in LA because you're from here, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
All in LA, yeah.
You grew up in Pasadena area?
No, I grew up in Eagle Rock. So
Eagle Rock,
very
yeah.
close to here. Yeah.
Gotcha. Yeah. I was curious too, because I know I feel like I vaguely. I know you've mentioned some of your family is religious on stage before.
Yeah. Well, my thing with religion is my family is Catholic. We're Mexican, so everyone just brought up Catholic, but they're not very Catholic. They're just kind of like traditionally Catholic. They did all the sacraments and all that stuff, but no one's like into it. The one person who is super religious is my sister. Middle sister, she became Pentecostal.
Oh, wow.
Which is so different. It's
really intense.
Really intense.
Yeah.
And she became this like back in the 90s. Like she's had like a hard life, but before that, she was already Pentecostal. She made this like choice. And it was very odd because she like stuck out in our family where she would then suddenly criticize like people like us like kind of. You know, Catholics are very about like the saints or the Virgin, and she didn't like any of that or any like the reliquary, I guess, of Catholicism and all the ceremony she thought was like idol worship and all that stuff.
Wow. Yeah.
But I had no kind of concept of what it means to truly be religious until I was like 9, because I went from a prep school to a private Christian school, and the Christian school was very, very religious. I mean, I like to say like it was like an elementary junior high version of the movie Saved, but way more.
Wow.
Yeah, it was very religious, and it was like as soon as someone's entered in, if they're not affiliated with any kind of church, they do look at you as like, oh, we need to save you. And that was like a whole mission in my first year. I was in fourth grade, and like everyone was like, Who's gonna save him? And it's like, well, I guess Jesus will, but I guess everyone is fighting over who's gonna initiate that. I don't
like they wanted to get the credit for it.
Right, which is so weird to me because it's like technically only if you believe this, only Jesus can save you. So I don't know why everyone is fighting over this weird credit, you know? Doesn't matter. But yes, I accepted Jesus into my heart and all that stuff.
Do you remember who ended up winning that? Who ended up who got the credit?
No, I don't. I think it was a teacher. I think it was someone named like Mrs. Trujillo or something like that. But I remember totally the moment where I like prayed and really prayed for the first time, like truly from like my heart prayed to be saved, and then totally just kind of bought into the culture of the school. And, you know, there was chapels every day, and we did like sword drill, which I don't know if anyone knows.
What's a sword drill?
Sword drill. Maybe it's only, no one knows what this
I've
is.
I've never heard of a sword drill.
Okay. Sword drill. Well, your sword is the Bible. Okay. And so you'd go to chapel and Pastor Gray would go up and he would yell out Bible verses, and then everyone would have to like look through their Bible for the verse, and the first person to stand up and read the verse like wins sword drill. There is no prize. It's just the feeling of winning sword drill in the glory of God. Like that's the prize, I guess.
Wow, yeah.
And it was so stupid because it's like, well, we are just, the Bible is numbered, so it's not impressive. It's just whoever
who's opening it fastest.
Right. And then people would cheat and put like tabs that weren't sticking out, but that you could kind of see.
Mm.
And you could just totally know, color-coded, what book of the Bible corresponded to each tab. So it was
like
very easy.
Like those little built-in tabs that are sort of indented in.
Right. Yeah. And so you could see, so they're not sticking out, but you could see like navy blue is right. Job or whatever, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Were you good at that? Did you win a lot of sword drills?
I did win a lot of sword drills. And you know what? It was just, I love the attention of like getting up and reading and being, and just reading verses. And
yeah.
I don't know.
But, and I mean.
And if I knew the Bible verse, because, you know, it's all about knowing the Bible and stuff. Now I totally forgot all that stuff because I'm a total heathen now through comedy. But like. Yeah. If it was a verse that had something to do with like someone being punished, like, I don't know, like Lot's wife or something, like I definitely always remembered those verses the most. So I'd be like, this is a good one. And so I really wanted to read that one. I didn't like boring ones that were like about existential spiritualism, probably the most important ones. I wanted stuff about like the desert witches and stuff like that. I wanted like story and drama.
Crime and punishment.
Yes. Yeah.
That's so funny. And so, but before that, you were like, you said you're like culturally Catholic, so you weren't really a believer per se. You were just kind of like, we just go to Catholic church, we just go to Mass.
Yeah, and you know, we went to Spanish Mass, so I don't speak fluent Spanish. I mean, I speak enough to understand, like, basic stuff. Like, I could get around in, like, Mexico, but I can't give, like, this would be hard to talk about existential stuff in Spanish. Like this, what we're doing now, would be very hard for me. I'd be like messing things up.
Mm-hmm.
So Spanish Mass, it would just lose me because I'd be like, okay, whatever. And yeah. I would only understand like maybe parables and stuff like that, but nothing where the priest went off on his own kind of thing. I would completely get lost.
Interesting.
And it was just kind of like, everyone was just bored sitting there in Mass. It wasn't a thing, you know, and I only went because there was like a frutas guy outside and he would like sell fruit and stuff. So I just could not wait because you can't eat before Mass. And then after Mass, no, you're not supposed to.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, you have to go in completely free of sin, I guess. I don't know. So, yeah, so I was just so excited for that big bag of fruit and like salt and chili and all that stuff. So I didn't really care about it. And I didn't even do all the sacraments because I went to this school that was Christian and not Catholic. So I only did baptism communion, and that's it. And then I didn't follow through with anything else.
So was there like a point where you kind of were like, oh, the Catholic Church is a bunch of posers? Like, we're the real, like, us at the school, we're the real deal. Like, we're the real believers of Jesus and Christ.
Yeah, especially because I had my sister who was so glad that I went to that school, and she was just very much like, you're gonna learn so much. And we definitely would like, we were the closest growing up because she was older than me, she was already an adult, but we would like, she was like my cool big sister, and like we would just kind of be like, oh, our silly family, like worshiping idols and like the candles of the Virgin Mary, like all this crazy shit.
Yeah.
And then that all kind of fell apart as soon as I started puberty, and then I realized that I was gay. And then it started this huge conflict of like,
ooh, yeah.
Because it was so not okay to be gay. I mean, they had whole lessons, especially in junior high Bible class. Mr. Orr, I remember, would have whole lessons about the sinfulness of homosexuality. And it would be kind of equal to him in the same lesson as pedophilia or incest and stuff like that. And it was just kind of accepted. So, and yet Mr. Orr, for some reason, was very hot. It was just very like, and now I'm into like mean people. So I don't know. There's something, it just kind of fucks you up. But I also hung out with a bunch of other like gay, like secret, very obviously gay, but like closeted Christian kids at the school. We were like a group.
Yeah.
And but no one was really allowed to call us gay, because so they'd call us different things that were euphemisms for it. Because I mean, to call someone gay, you could get in a lot of trouble because you are accusing them of being completely like bound for hell.
Right. Yeah. Like a demon.
Right.
Yeah.
So I remember some teachers would try to like slide over. Like we had like a cool English teacher in eighth grade, and she would be like, "You guys aren't gay. You're just like Metro." And I'm like, okay, that springs from gay culture. That's so funny that you're like hilarious. Using that to like pave over the truth.
Were you like, when she said that, was there a part of you that was like in denial about being gay? That you're kind of like, oh, maybe I'm not. Maybe I am like just Metro. Or...
I was totally in denial about being gay publicly, but like
privately,
it was like, I am very gay.
Like, nah, man, I'm gay.
I mean, it was just. So strong, yes. You know,
it wasn't like a gray area. Wasn't
no,
it? Yeah.
I never, and many people have those confusing times of like, oh, I have attraction to both, or what am I? I was never confused. I was just confused about is this okay or not, but I was never confused that I liked men ever. Yeah. It was just from my first time that I ever like jacked off, I knew it was just there, you know.
Interesting. You're just trying to get this like the timeline in. So it's like you're still pretty into God though, as you're like coming into puberty.
But yeah? I'm also pretty into dick.
But
no.
Very
into God.
Yeah. So you're still into God, but also realizing like I'm not like I'm definitely gay. Like I'm so. But and you're being taught constantly by all these adults that there's something like inherently wrong with you.
Right.
I mean, you always seem like a very mentally strong person, like a very like not bothered by outsider opinion type person. I mean, were you that way when you were going through that?
Totally. Yeah. I think going through that probably made me not give as much of a fuck about stuff as an adult, because so young, you have to kind of form your own mind, even though you're surrounded by this place that where everyone is telling you the opposite. And some people don't have the mental strength to do that, and some people do, or it takes them much longer.
Right.
By the time I went to high school and I graduated from that Christian school where I'd spent 6 or 7 years, I did consider myself Christian, but I did convince myself that God loves you regardless of if you're gay or not. In high school, I went to this like completely heathen like Sodom and Gomorrah art school that like was very competitive to get into, but I went to because it was like it's just gonna be like women and like gay guys,
right?
But in that time, I completely gave up religion. By the end of high school, I completely gave up religion and thought that I couldn't be part of this thing and kind of pick and choose stuff, because a lot of people in that religion wouldn't let me. You know what I mean? There definitely are churches that are very welcoming to gay people, but I do still feel that they are in they're in a huge denial in that they are part of this religion that does not welcome them. Even though they have maybe a church that welcomes gay people, the religion as a whole doesn't.
Yeah.
And that always bothered me. And so by the end of high school, I kind of gave that up. And I had a huge falling out with my sister, who, when I came out to her as gay, she and I just, I mean, we just don't speak anymore, you know? And no one else in my family had that problem, though, because again, no one else was that religious. So everyone was like, we know, and also we don't care. Or if they did care, they didn't tell me.
Do you remember how your parents were like reacting to you, like being more into like getting more into Christian, like more hardcore about it, while they're sort of like nonchalant, more or less? Were they like worried that you were kind of getting, like that you and your sister were getting more fundamentalist? Or
my dad thought I was becoming like a total zealot, like a little mini like pastor who is having gay affairs on the side, but like a child. Like he actually like really regretted that school after a few years, because he was like, oh my God. And my mom was a bit on the fence. I think it definitely did surprise them, like how into it I got, because they, my dad had gone to Catholic school for a bit, but not as long as I did. And he was like, well, I never like fell for all that shit. And I was like, I think it is a little different because he was raised Catholic. So it was not a thing to fall into. It was just kind of like, and also Catholic school is different than Christian school. It just is. Mm-hmm. I feel like they have this thing about like Catholic school people are usually like way, way better than people in Christian school. And I think that's totally true. I mean, mm-hmm.
Why do you think that's true?
I think because most of them are raised that way and they have already kind of mentally decided, well, this is just like more of a culture than a religion. You know?
Yeah. They're going to pick and choose a lot.
Yeah. And, yeah. But for some, I think, and maybe it's about how they teach. They kind of go more in depth in a Christian school. What was weird is our Christian school welcomed so many different denominations of Christian, you know, like Baptists and Episcopalians mm-hmm. and like Pentecostal people and all these. And so it's very, it was very odd, hodgepodge, but they all have something in common is that they do, I feel like they do go much more in depth. Even if you go to a Christian service, those pastors go so much deeper and they kind of connect you in a more modern sense. Well, I feel like if you go to a Catholic mass, it's so steeped in tradition, you can disconnect yourself more from it. Where if you're going to like Christian Assembly over in Eagle Rock, it's like there's guys with electric guitars and they're like, yeah, I know everything seems right, guys, but let's really talk about this. I mean, you were rooming with Steve Hernandez, who used to be a pastor like that, and he would hook people in with his charisma and his like modernness and his coolness and kind of relating to their real lives. And that's what really gets people.
Yeah.
Where if you're kind of dressed in this ancient robe, it just seems a little, it seems a little distant.
Yeah. Stale, culturally irrelevant or something.
Right.
I remember Presbyterians is what I grew up and they are very traditional, but I mean, they're kind of like middle of the road politically or whatever, like in terms of being gay friendly. And like I think basically a lot of the congregation is now starting to split off because they don't agree with like being more gay friendly. And there's a whole like liberal wing, but kind of in that vein, there were like a lot of, I remember just like even the idea of going to having one contemporary service, quote unquote, like later in the evening was like
really
a real kerfuffle for some people.
They'd have services that ideologically conflict in the same evening but at different times.
They wouldn't ideologically conflict. That they would be literally all the difference would be like having people play in a band instead of an organ, and then having like the pastor in jeans and a, you know, unbuttoned shirt.
So it's more like tradition customs would conflict a little bit.
Right. You would maybe have a couple less. Maybe there'd be certain things that were like left out of the service, or maybe you would combine certain things.
Right.
But like some people were just really bothered by that. Like they felt like they had to have it the perfect, like, why do we, and I think that type of church person is dying out. I mean, that's like all your people 50, 60 and older.
Right.
Who are like, this is the way it's always been done. Yeah. Why would we ever change? We nailed it the first time. We don't need to do it. But then, I hate that, but then sometimes I remember, I mean, I've gone to like Mosaic in Hollywood. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you've ever been down there, but it is a weird feeling. Like, it's like, I don't know. It's hard not to feel a cult vibe from it.
And you're talking about the church and not the major management company, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Mosaic's also a huge management company. I'm with Mosaic.
Definitely the church.
That is so funny though to me that's the name of a church also in Hollywood.
Yeah, but I wasn't even aware of the management company.
Oh yeah, it's huge. It's like Three Arts. Oh, it's like people are like, I'm with CAA Mosaic. Like it's like
that's funny. And so, okay, so then at eight, so are when you kind of left Christianity when you were in your art school?
Yeah,
were you like from the intellectual side? Were you kind of like also not really believing that God was real or Jesus, like once one thing sort of fell off, were you kind of like the whole thing? I mean, for me, a lot of it when I a significant chunk of my like moving away from Christianity. Besides, I had like this course that I took in college that made me study the Bible, but also just like having access to the internet and being able to do your own research.
Yeah.
Kind of made me be like, I can't be intellectually honest and like really follow this. I mean, was that kind of your experience or?
Yes. Yeah. I mean, the internet played a huge role because it can show you your different options. I mean, I was kind of thinking, well, maybe I should go back to kind of like how I was raised a little bit being Catholic, but get more in depth into it, not just be kind of like a general Catholic. And then when you research the Catholic Church, I mean, everything is just so fucked up. I mean, you get so much pedophilia, and then you ask people in your family and they've been molested. And I'm like, I cannot be part of something that has that. And then that doesn't do anything and just transfers these priests. There are certain deal breakers. I feel like I'm actually like a staunch non-religious person. There are deal breakers with religion, and not being welcoming of gays is a deal breaker, and molesting kids and not doing anything to overhaul that problem is a deal breaker. I can't be part of any kind of religion that does that, you know? And when I was in high school, my sister, who's very religious, her son passed away of brain cancer, and that I think really, I dropped out of the art school because I thought it was stupid. And then I definitely completely lost religion because I was like, I don't think things happen in this magical spiritual way. I think things happen. And I think that we have a spirit and an energy, but I kind of just was so exhausted and trying to figure it out. I just stopped trying to figure it out. I was like, I just don't know, but I know that whatever they're spouting is just, they're holding onto it because that's all that they have. And I saw that so much with my sister. I mean, she held onto her faith so much in that time because she had no other choice, you know?
Yeah.
And there is something about dying kids. I mean, I worked at this children's hospital and the Children's Hospital of LA, and they have tons of very critical kids or terminal kids. And they even tell you in the training that these kids can sometimes say things that are like very creepy. Like they have like an insight when they're dying of certain things that are a little out of this world.
Yeah.
And the same thing happened with my nephew. I mean, he was raised so religious, and yet he told me on his deathbed, and he was 13. I mean, he's not like someone who was like in college or like, you know, he was 13. He went to like public schools. He's not like this kid who had opportunities to kind of like take a philosophy class or anything.
Right.
He told me, he was like, I know my mom hates gay people, but I don't hate gay people. I think that's stupid. And I was just like, the fact that he could just come upon that realization on his own while he was dying. And something happens with the kids in the hospital where they say stuff like that, or they say stuff that is like, gives the notion that they're kind of half in, half out of this world. And I started to see in him, and then years later in those kids, that I do think that so many people are wrong about what is next or what is spirituality. I think that people are off the mark.
Yeah.
Because I feel like there's something to be said about this kind of total openness about these kids who are facing their own demise so young.
Yeah.
You know, I think it's odd.
Yeah, that must have, I mean, that's, kids are already like so kind of honest in a pure way, especially the like the younger they are.
Yeah.
Like they have no filter, you know, it's a classic no filter, like they don't understand what they're saying is socially unacceptable. Right. I can only imagine, yeah, being on your deathbed, like being facing like you have that little honesty, that less of a filter, and then also this quick encounter with like the ultimate reality that everybody has to face. That's one of the few things all of us have in common,
right?
Is we're all gonna kick it someday. That's crazy. I mean, how many of those kids would, like, do you remember how many of them would kind of be like, were religious or like really like raised Christian or anything?
I don't know anything about anyone's religious background. I know that they would just say cryptic weird things while they were dying, you know. I mean, their dying process takes a long time, you know. Yeah. I mean, it can be quick, but for dying it can be long. I mean, even if it takes a few months for you to die, that is a long time to contemplate your death, you know. Most people just go.
How did I mean, not even specifically with like religion or spirituality or anything, but how did being around, how long did you work at the hospital?
Just a year.
How, what was like the, did you notice any difference between, and like your own kind of life, I don't know, perspective and after that year of like having, cause I, most people, we don't hang out with a lot of dying people. We don't get to encounter that on a,
It just solidified that I was, that I do think I'm right, that those, that religions are mostly wrong. I think that the thing that they all have in common is probably more on the mark, but everything else, all the bullshit surrounding it, it is mostly wrong. Because I mean, why are all these kids dying? I mean, it's just, it kind of just shows you that I don't think that there is this, I really don't think there is a God that has a plan.
Yeah.
I think that things just happen.
Yeah, I don't think there's like a conscious and single super entity, you know, like a big macro, like all powerful being. That, I mean, I think one of the first things for me that went was like, it is that problem, the you know, the quote unquote problem of evil. It's like a classic one that, where the idea that like, how can God be both all powerful, all knowing, like omnipotent, omniscient, and perfectly loving, and also there could be evil. Like, it is
right.
That's the first one. And then so much of Christianity in particular, it's like squirming to try to answer that question.
Well,
constantly.
You know what they say? They say that he puts that there to test you.
Right.
That he needs to give you free will. He needs to give you horror
right.
in order to see if you are worthy of, you know, eternal life.
Right.
And to me, I'm like, what a manipulative little bitch. I'm like, that is so awful. Like, I need to see how you're going to react in this situation.
Yeah.
And
it just never made any sense.
It doesn't. And he equips everyone differently. I mean, some people just have this brilliantly open mind. I mean, some people just are, they're just born with a higher mind. I mean, my nephew Ricky, he was, and his sister and his mom and everyone else, they weren't. You know, it doesn't mean that they can't get there, but he just, it just never, all that stuff just never entered him and changed him. It just didn't. He just realized, oh, that's not true.
Mm-hmm.
There was just something in him, and some people don't have that. You know, it's kind of like how some people can be raised super Republican and conservative and just never adhere to it later. And some people just do, you know?
Yeah. Never questioning it. Never
questioning it. And then they could be related to a sibling who totally does and said, this is fucked up, you know?
Yeah.
I think it is just, religion just stems from people scared to die, and they're kind of trying to set up. We love to set up like what's going to happen, but it is just a total guess, I think.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of that. And then to also, just all the specific, I mean, it makes more sense, you know, when a lot of the origins of it, when we didn't have nearly the scientific advances we have now. So it's like, it makes more sense to be like, I don't know, there's a lot of fucking magic that happens. Like, literally the entire natural world is going to feel magical like 2,000 years ago.
Right.
So that's, I don't really hold it against those people of like, yeah, it's probably a god up there. Like, there's probably some kind of super being that's doing this.
But the thing is, too, is what definitely lost me after Ricky died was they were just like, in Christianity, it's like the deeds won't win you into heaven. It's only the acceptance of Jesus into your heart. And just kind of
opposite of the Catholic thing.
Right. And just kind of like thinking, well, I don't know if that's opposite of the Catholic thing, but just like thinking someone who could be like, and I know this is so basic, but someone who could be like a murderer, a pedophile, a rapist can also burn in hell. With someone who wasn't any of those things, he just never accepted Jesus in his heart, but he was like a fine guy. He worked at Pollo Loco or something. He could like go to hell too. I'm like, why? That's insane. And they're like, well, there's a different level of hell. I'm like, I don't think the Bible talks about that even.
No, that's Dante.
So they're like, well, they just don't burn at the deepest part of hell. I'm like, you're just now editorializing totally. This religion.
Yeah.
And it just doesn't make sense, you know? But what does make sense is kind of when you hear about Eastern religions where they think that the spirit continues on a journey of danger, of goodness, of bad, of evil. It's just a continued journey of what we are living now. Yeah. And I'm like, that seems so much more believable, that when you die, your spirit goes on to continue this journey of wherever they are, and there's good and bad there.
Yeah. Have you gotten into like Buddhism or anything? Or
no, I just watched this crazy thing on the book, the book of Tibet, or like the
Tibetan Book of the Dead.
Yes, that scary piece of religious literature. And then there's like demons and like spirits that are like going to trick you, so that's why you need to chant. And I'm like, oh my God. I'm like, so just like in real life, like there's people that can lead you astray. You need help, you know?
Yeah. That is one thing I liked a lot about Eastern religions, because when I started getting into comedy, I got more into them, especially my first couple years. And it's kind of, it is a more acceptance of like good and bad, of like, it's not trying to explain away evil. In fact, and sometimes it's saying like some people just have like an evil sort of nature, quote unquote evil nature to them. Like some people, the whole yin and yang thing. I mean, it's an example. It's a representation of that you need.
Right.
You need both forces in order for anything to be. For each force needs each other. You need good, or else you don't have evil, and vice versa.
But that always bothers me too, because it's like no one is fully evil and no one is fully good. I guess you're saying the same thing, but it's like. It's weird when you read about people who do shit like become serial killers or rapists, or there was this episode of Lore, you know, that podcast Lore, where he was talking about that like famous serial killer in Chicago who made like a murder hotel, and the hotel the Homes, I think it was, the hotel was, he made it so he could murder people, and it was just like, I mean, ingeniously constructed so that he, like, there was like trap doors where people didn't know, hallways that led to nowhere that he only could access, and like chutes that would put the body, like, he just, people didn't know about it for ages. And he said, when right before he was gonna die, that he doesn't know why he does all that stuff. He was just born with the devil on his back. He says, I don't know why, he's always been there, he's been a specter in my life. And I'm not excusing him, but there does seem to be people who just, they have this thing that is just monstrous that other people don't have. I mean, we all have these things where we're like, I'm so angry I could kill that person now, but we don't go through with it, mainly because there's consequences, but also because we know emotionally that we couldn't handle. Right. It's not even the jail. It's like, emotionally, could we handle ourselves after we did that?
Right.
And we just couldn't. The sorrow and the brokenness we'd feel, these people don't feel that. And that's what's weird to me. Like, they're born naturally dark, you know?
Yeah, it's a total, like, you're right. It's like, this is in your nature or not to be able to do some of that
and
shit.
It's not excusing them. I mean, I'm not saying, hey, don't lock them up or anything, but it's...
Yeah, it's
scary.
It's like, I mean, and this is, I feel like there might be, I don't know if there's some Christians who might kind of be more into that. But it is interesting being like the role, just the idea that we all have roles, and in a fucked up way, in order for the macro level human story to continue, we need some bad guys. And it's not that we want them to do bad. And it's not that we want to punish them, like, you know, but like everybody sort of has to just do their role.
But it's bad from the perspective of the opposition, meaning like whoever the bad guy is, they definitely don't think that they are.
Right.
They think that they're good.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there's like do you know the word thug originally comes from like a Hindu death cult, like people who worshiped a specific Hindu gods. It was like. Basically, these like, and I'm gonna, you know, people will look this up later and realize I didn't know enough what I was talking about. But basically, it's like these groups of like, you know, robbers, these guys who thought they were worshiping a certain Hindu god of destruction, and that they would kill people, like they would rob and kill people on the side of the road, but think that they were helping carry out some greater divine law. Or like you see that with a lot of like kind of death cults. It's like, hey, somebody's got to do it. It's just in me that I'm gonna do it this way, or
right,
you know, somebody's got to be the cartel, somebody's got to like be the person. Like, you know, we can argue whether somebody actually has to be that, but
yeah, no,
in their own head, that's kind of how a lot
they
of
justify
them,
it.
Yeah,
yeah, everyone has their own justification, and they rationalize things, And then now you dip into like mental illness because being able to rationalize certain things can be a signifier of being mentally ill. You know what I mean? Like there are serial killers where like, I just don't like, I like killing. It gets me off. They can't feel any kind of empathy for the other person being killed. They just don't feel it.
Yeah.
And even when you hear them in interviews saying like, I guess I am a bad person, they are saying that in like, in your context of society, I guess I am one, but they definitely don't feel that.
Yeah. I'm curious too. This is sort of a pivot from what we're talking about because I haven't thought about it in myself in a while, but in terms of doing comedy, because you started pretty young, probably right after sort of like this falling away from.
Yeah, I started at 18.
So how much, was there any relationship there between not being religious and then having comedy? I only say that because like, I think I didn't even realize it, but one factor for me might've been just, there's not a lot of places, at least growing up in the South, where it was like socially acceptable to talk about atheism or challenge the idea of God. And yet comedy was always one. And even like Southerners who were like Christians would kind of be like, okay with it. Cause like, oh, it's not all in the context of making things funny or whatever.
Right.
And, I mean, was there any kind of relationship like that? Like, oh, this is a place where I can just be my total self. And there is a sort of like, there isn't a rules being given by some higher being that we're all agreeing to. We're all just human beings here.
Yeah. I think that I was attracted to comedy. I stopped going to that art school cause I got in for acting and that's what I thought I was going to do because I don't know, after my nephew's death, I just fell into this depression where, you know, one side effect is you lose interest in everything you had interest in before. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't, I've never suffered from chronic depression. It was because of a certain event, but when I started to come out of it, I just didn't feel connected to acting. I thought it was like an artifice. It was just fake. I just thought it was like the dumbest thing, especially because I remember being in an acting class there at that school and we had to like do a character, like an improvise a character. And the whole class was like sitting around and I didn't do my homework and I just made one up. And when we were improvising, everyone of course had to really think about this and do an outline and all this stuff. And I went up and I just like pretended to be like a retarded person. And then it was like, everyone was like so riveted. And I was like, this is bullshit. I'm like, anyone can do this. I'm like, it's ridiculous. And so I stopped and I loved that stand up. I saw Margaret Cho do stand up and I loved that she could just say whatever the fuck she wanted. There was craft to it, but there was freedom. There was no rule and the craft really does depend on the person and what style you're doing. I loved that. And I also did love that there was just no rules. There was no rules artistically and there was no rules ideologically. There are so many different types of stand up. And I think it came from coming out of art school and definitely coming out of that religion where it was just kind of like, you could just do anything.
Yeah.
You know, I loved that freedom. And yeah, you could say anything. I mean, I constantly do. I say stuff that, I feel like if I were to say in conversation to people, they would mistake it or they would think it's, I'm being a harsh person. And speaking to what you said about like even religious Southerners like comedy that can question God, I feel like people everywhere look to comedy to do just that because it kind of is safe for them. As an audience watching comedy, you can see someone else say the thing that you're thinking or that you're questioning and laugh at it because there is some truth in it. Yeah. But if the comedian goes too far, you can distance yourself and say, but your job was just to be funny, even though you're really there to watch them say something that you couldn't say.
Yeah. I mean, and you might be sitting next to a person you couldn't say that to.
No,
Your wife or whoever.
Exactly.
But you're like, oh, hell yeah, somebody's finally saying it.
Exactly. But as soon as things go too far and you don't like it, then you can cut off and go, hey, dance monkey, you're just a dancing monkey. So you're nothing. And it's like, it's a convenient thing for the audience. That's why the audience is always, it's like, I hate to say this, like the audience is someone that is not to be trusted. Like you definitely need you need their laughs because it's involuntary. Like laughter, definitely for that aspect, you need an audience. But I don't believe in writing your stand-up in whatever the audience wants to hear, because it's like, no, write what you want to do, because that's actually what they want to hear, is they want to hear what they can't say or what they don't want to say, you know?
Yeah, somebody says like the talking about like the unknown knowns, or like, yeah, just bringing truth to those little, it's like, that's one of my favorite parts, is when I'm able to like just write something that's literally, it's like, it's just capturing some weird subconscious thought that's like
right.
flittingly passed through my brain, and you're right. like kind of like grabbing into the stream of it, like, haha, I got yeah. it. Yeah.
And also, I think that's why some people connect to certain stand-ups, and some people don't, because some people spout your truth and some people don't, you know?
Yeah.
There are people who love Bill Burr. He is so funny, but he does stand-up that I don't agree with most of the stuff that he says, but
right,
he has
yeah.
a very funny bit, and I think it's a really good example. It's a bit about how he doesn't, he cannot stand more movies about like black sports teams, and the punchline in that, he's like, yeah, I just don't think I give a fuck anymore. And it's like, that is very funny, because he is connecting to this kind of people who are very tired of these kind of inspirational race-based movies, even though there's a whole other part of society that's like, no, we still need them because everything is very unfair.
Yeah.
But he's connecting to this truth that is a certain audience's truth. You know, it's not the truth. It's just, no one connects to the truth. It's just your certain
truth.
People's truth, you
yeah,
know?
Yeah, a certain segment of the population.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, then Patrice O'Neill being the other, you know, big Burr friend and
yeah.
et cetera. But like, and also somebody that you feel like probably most of society wouldn't agree with his views on like women. But
yeah.
there's a certain segment, especially of like men and a lot of women too, but where it was just really just articulating things that people were like, man, I wish I could just say this. I wish I could
yeah.
just be out in front of this.
And then even I do think people take, like, if you don't agree with Patrice O'Neill or Bill Burr, sometimes a lot of times they can still make me laugh, because even though it's not connecting with my truth, I do know that there are so many people who feel this way, and it is kind of funny to just see it like an uncle who is just kind of saying anything, you know?
Yeah,
you're
yeah.
just kind of like, yeah, I get that that's something that is real for you. But then on the flip side, you have people like, that's the opposite of them, like Margaret Cho, who very much speaks to like women and gay men and stuff. And the reason that is because she's so fiercely angry all the time.
Yeah.
She can be kind of that spearhead that they need, because they are constantly fighting whatever Bill Burr is spouting, you know. But it's kind of weird, because it almost like is good and evil. Neither are good or evil. It's just you need almost both, you know.
Totally, yeah. And you know, and sometimes, you know, as a straight white male, there's
congrats.
Thank you. There's definitely certain people where they're very angry towards us. I don't know if you've heard this.
Yes.
A lot of people not huge fans.
Yes, yes.
And those are definitely, there's times when it's like really hard for me to connect with them.
Yeah.
But there's also, I think, especially like as a comedy person, you can be like, not everything is supposed to be for me. They're not writing this
right.
to make me feel better.
Right.
They're, you know, the classic saying, they're comforting the afflicted and afflicting the comfortable. You know,
exactly.
I'm the comfortable that needs some afflicting sometimes.
Absolutely, because you know? Those groups, even though they can, and I know who you're talking about, like the people who will just make you feel uncomfortable just for being
you. Yeah.
For no reason. Like, I could understand maybe if you were like on stage doing something or whatever.
Right.
But, you know,
just the generic, like, all you, white men need to like die,
right?
Or something
like I
that.
Saw, like, I saw someone who is a friend of a lot of people, and she heckled someone who is such a nice guy, who is also a straight white male, who's just doing stand up about like chairs or whatever.
Yeah.
And she was like, oh God, I can't stand to listen. And I was like, shut up. I'm like, this is his time. Your time is when you're on stage. You don't get to, just because that
yeah.
person is a straight male. But just like you said, people who are like minorities, they are not used to having representation as much as like straight white guys, the norm
right.
is. So it is kind of hard for some straight white guys to realize, yeah, this isn't for me. Like, this, I have so much stuff. This is not for me.
Yeah.
It's okay because this is not my experience.
And by the way, I mean, there's so many people I laugh my fucking ass off that that hate straight white men, and we'll talk about it as part of their act, but they're so good. I don't even care. And also there's like, I think there's a certain level. I don't know whether it's, I feel like even Margaret Cho doesn't really hate straight white men on like some deep, like on a generic.
She for sure doesn't. She's just, and she doesn't do stand up against straight white men. I don't think she's ever done stand up where she said that.
Right. I was just picking a random example that we were talking about, but like, there's nothing specifically of her that I can even, is even coming to mind as something like that. But, yeah, because there's like different levels too. I mean, when you're, that's sometimes I think hard for audiences to, and it's hard for me sometimes to pick it apart in myself, where you're like, you have your on stage sort of, whether you call it a character or persona, your sort of the person you, your on stage presence is going to be articulating a lot of these kind of unconscious, subconscious, maybe not fully thought out or fully fair or fully like, you know, well formed and like fortress. Intellectual fortress, like totally like perfectly constructed argument. A lot of it's just going to be like half-assed type of thoughts, but they really connect with us on an emotional level.
Yeah.
So that person, when they're off stage, can be like, yeah, I mean, that's why it's a joke. I'm just, it's joking.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I also think that, I don't know. It is weird to me as someone who is, If you are someone who feels underrepresented or a minority and you're doing stand up, I do feel it's more effective to just speak to your experience and your truth, because that is putting a different viewpoint and yourself out there. But when you start to throw things at like general straight white guys, I'm not saying you can't do it. It better be a good bit. It's just it needs more nuance than just like they're bad. It's like, you know what I mean? It definitely,
an angle, a take,
you know? Yeah.
Yeah. Well, cool, man. Well, we're about that time. If you want to make up a religion,
oh God,
I mean, we can do, it doesn't have to be silly. I mean, this is whatever. There's no, we can do this lightning round style.
Okay. Wait, are we making it up together, or do you make up one and I make up one?
I ask you questions like bullet points,
yeah,
different components of it. And then it's you making it up. I don't really have a part of making it up.
Yeah.
So it can be something that you wish existed, that you want to be a part of, that a cult you wanted to start yourself or something, anything, whatever. In this made up religion, Jonathan, what kind of God structure would you like? Would you like a monotheistic? Would you like a polytheistic? Do you like no God at all? Sort of like, you know, Buddhism or whatever?
I want many gods, and I want them all to be like, at the risk of sounding insufferable, I want them all to be gender fluid or drag kings or drag queens, you know? And they all have a different purpose and you pray to them for different reasons. Like in Game of Thrones, how they're like the many seven gods, right, or whatever. Like, yeah. And and not one god. And it's known that the gods are like, have their own personalities.
Mm-hmm.
This is very like ancient type of stuff where it's like, could for no reason like strike you down
like the Greeks,
right?
They're very arbitrary
and they're very like petty human gods, you know.
Yeah.
some
petty gender fluid gods. I love
and I think, okay, what's the next question?
I was just gonna say, what would be like kind of overarching ethos or like main takeaway message, like if it's like in Buddhism, it'd be like, you know, everybody suffers, and then, but if we see clearly, you know, we can alleviate our suffering. Or Christianity is like God sent his son to die for us or whatever.
Right.
Doesn't have to be a really big thing either.
I think that the main takeaway from the religion, this is like writing a report.
Yeah.
The main takeaway from this religion that I'm currently writing about in this essay is to live pleasurably.
Live pleasurably.
Without hurting others.
There you go. Like ethical hedonism.
Yes.
Yeah.
It is important to nurture your own happiness without hurting others.
Right on.
Yes.
Are there any rules or sins, behavior code, do's or don'ts?
Closed-mindedness is a sin. Mm-hmm. So anything that's like, that's not normal is a sin.
Mm-hmm.
And then do's are just like always, like just dressing up more, like for events. That's more of a tradition, I guess.
Dress code everywhere.
Yes. Like there's lots of colorful scarves. That's kind of like the, how you know that you're part of this religion or cult is like the scarves are just like out of this world. They're just so colorful. They are like our marker, you know?
I fucking love that. Are there any, is there any holy text, whether it's a book or a magazine or a blog?
There's a huge wall, a stone wall that's like, it maybe takes up like a 2 city blocks, and it's everyone that's part of the religion contributes certain things to the wall, and that is kind of the holy text. And so it's always changing and
like
being,
sticky notes on it or what?
No, like etched into it.
Okay.
You know,
okay.
Or like graffitied onto it. So it's this holy wall of like sacred thoughts and stuff, you know? Kind of like a green room when everyone signs it, except they don't sign it with their name. They sign it with like a thought or something that they think is a good piece of information or wisdom to give.
Interesting.
And then you can kind of pick and choose from the wall what relates to you.
I like that. Can people paint over each other's stuff?
No. No, they can't. So you do have to find a space.
Mm-hmm.
And then I guess they keep like creating another wall behind it. So maybe like over hundreds and hundreds of years, it becomes like a garden of different holy walls that take up maybe like a park or something.
That's cool. Then you can go back in time and see the original wall. And,
yeah. Maybe they do community gardens in between the walls, like on the ground.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Is there any, whether it's a weekly or monthly or yearly kind of gathering at these walls? Or
definitely monthly. Like people have lives, like we're busy, you know, and we need to meet. I say at twilight because that's like a fun time for me.
That's a really, just even saying it's a really fun time.
Right.
Yeah.
And then like once a year we have like a midnight sleepover or something. And we have different satellite groups like throughout the world. So we like hook up and we Skype. And we use one of the walls to put a projection screen over so we can all like see each other.
Okay. Is there any music going on at these things?
Yeah, it's like whatever Bjork is cooking up.
Are you praying at these meetups at the wall?
Yeah, but no one's like being obnoxious about it.
Nobody's
like
leading it or anything?
No.
Or, yeah.
Just like pray on your own time when you want.
Is there any sense of apologizing or repentance in this religion?
Oh, what's not allowed is these types of apologies. I'm sorry that you felt that I did something bad. If you're going to apologize for whatever, you have to actually apologize or don't apologize.
Yeah.
But it is like a mortal sin to give those types of bullshit apologies.
Yeah, they're not. Yeah, I fucking hate those.
Yes.
In
which case, if you give one of those apologies, then your plot in the community garden is completely wiped clean, and then someone else gets to take it.
They get to wipe over everything you ever wrote, too, or no?
No, that can stay, unless it has something to do with that type of, like, mortal sin.
Mm. What happens if somebody writes something on the wall that's, like, wrong? What if they just vandalize it?
Oh, anything that's hateful does get completely painted over, and then someone else can put something. It can't be anything, like, negative or exclusive or anything like that.
Okay. Is there any kind of like youth group or Sunday school aspects? Are kids doing anything different?
No, like kids are like, you could like know about it, but it's a religion that you have to make a conscious choice once you're fully grown to be a part of. You can't be like indoctrinated as a kid.
It's like 18 and up religion. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Is there any is there any like service or mission work or like volunteering or
There's
anything?
Absolutely no mission work. We're like the Jews. We're like, we don't like proselytize, I guess.
We don't really want you to come.
No, we're like the Jews, but nicer. Like we do want you to come, but like come if you can or like come if you want. Uh-huh. It's like a birthday. It's like, hey, like I'm having my birthday at a bar. Like come if you can, but I don't care if you don't, you know?
Sure.
Yeah.
Okay. Is there any like, are you doing any volunteering, like kind of community service stuff?
Yes, everyone has to do at least 10 hours of volunteering a year, which is very minimal.
That's not a lot.
No.
Yeah, that's really not asking too much.
At least, yeah.
I mean, I currently don't do that, and I feel really bad that I don't do
that.
Right. But it's very easy that I could knock that out literally in a day.
Right.
Yeah.
But you don't even need two in a day. You could do two, and so you just need like 2 hours over 5 days over a year.
Yeah.
That's your voluntary.
Anybody can do that.
Right.
Anybody can. Is there any sense of afterlife or belief in an afterlife in this?
Like, whatever. Like, that's like what it is, you know?
Love it. And finally, what is the name of it? So we got a wall, we got scarves, gender fluidity.
The Smizel Stones.
The Smizel Stones.
The Smizel Stones.
How do you spell that?
Smize, like Tyra Banks' Smize.
I don't know that.
Okay, it's like...
I'm a straight white male.
Okay,
I don't know this.
So like she taught like when you look serious, you can still smile with your eyes, and she calls it smiling.
That's
so
amazing.
Smiling is smizing is like that, but like serious. And then I just transformed it to Tyra Banks. And the reason we say Smizel Stones is because of the stones that signify our religion to like put kindness and wisdom and peace messages on. So Smizel Stones.
Right on.
Yeah. And that's how we know if we're not wearing scarves, if we're like in North Korea, like we know because we smize at each other that we're Smizel Stones.
They will know us by our smize.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, that was fucking great. That's one of the more, definitely one of the more interesting ones I've had in a while.
Yeah. Arcade Fire is a huge part of that religion.
Well, thank you so much for coming over today.
Of course. This is great. Super fun.
Where could people find you on like social media or anything? Or?
Just find me on Twitter at John Rowell. So it's JonRowell on Twitter. That's it.
Hell yeah.
Yeah.
Dude, this is awesome.
Thanks so much.
Thank you. And that's the show. Once again, thank you so much to Jonathan for coming out. Thank you for listening. You can go to chooseyourownreligion.com for old episodes and for my blog on there now that I'm finally updating it again. And do whatever you want to do, but please love yourself. I'm going to be fine. I love you guys very much. Jamaste.
What's a Creative Podcast Network?